Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That second stage is where I think we are right now, which is that transition. And how quickly that second stage takes, we don't know yet. Now, we feel like we're in a good position. We feel like the not only the young guys that are here, but the young guys that are coming behind them and the veterans we add put us in a real good position to make that next step through that third stage.
We think the very bright days are ahead of us, and we look forward to enjoying them. But in terms of feeling like we've accomplished something or being satisfied, ask me after the parade.
I would be disappointed if we don't make the postseason. I think that would be accurate. We want to break through. We want this to be an impactful season, and I think you can't force those things. You got to allow them to obviously play themselves out. But I think man for man, now we at least have a little bit more ammunition to be able to go out and compete, hopefully on a consistent basis that puts those victories on the board.
It's Mark Grody and Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
Hello and good morning. The voices of White Sox general manager Rick Hahn and White Sox manager, or do you prefer skipper, Ricky Renteria. And what has continued to be a lot of White Sox coverage because Sox Fest has been going on and it has wrapped up, as a matter of fact, out at McCormick Place on the south side of Chicago. And we will continue to talk about the White Sox here today in baseball and football and basketball. We got it all covered for you. I am Mark Grody. That is Anthony Herron.
Hey.
Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Mark Grody. I'm digging this new look already, and it's not even fully fleshed out yet. It hasn't come to fruition, but I like where you're headed with this.
It's in a complicated stage, and of course, Anthony Herron is referring to the beard that I am growing. You know, as Michael Che from Saturday Night Live likes to say, I'm just going to be another white guy with a beard.
They're out there, man. They're in full force. They're everywhere you turn. There's white guys with beards.
Yeah.
Various types, though. Various sizes and shapes and
yeah.
levels of manicure and, you know, who knows, pedicure if you got hairy feet, I suppose. But
yeah.
but this one, it's got potential. I remember seeing you at the orange carpet deal last, I don't know, spring or whatever that was, early summer. I don't remember when exactly they did it, but last football offseason. And you just kind of happened upon me on the orange carpet, like, look at Mark Grody and all his glory and his blazer and, you know, his trim physique now and all that stuff. And now I feel like the offseason, the football offseason, at least going to be an exciting time for Groats again. We'll see what you bring to the table here.
Yeah, I don't have to be presentable to anybody because I'm not in Lake Forest on a daily basis. So I am. We're just seeing what it is. Sometimes
yeah,
you got to check the beard potential. I'm going to grow it all out and then trim it. I don't know. I was talking to Kevin Zipak, maybe color it. I don't know. I mean,
he had some odd suggestions for
yeah.
color, which is unsurprising from Zipak, but I mean, you could go different directions with it. You don't necessarily have to just go with one of the standard sort of, you know, things to match your hair.
You got to recreate yourself in life.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. You know, you don't have to do, you have to hit the refresh button right. on life sometimes. So that's what's happening for me right now as far as the physical appearance is concerned. On the show today, man, we got a lot. We have
Correct.
A lot because we have additions to the show beyond what we even thought we were going to do today.
Mm-hmm. Beyond our imagination, our comprehension.
Oh, my goodness. So on the show today, here is what we have scheduled in terms of guests. We will have at 9:40 this morning, Tom Thayer, the former Chicago Bears guard, now with the Chicago Bears Radio Network, an analyst along with Jeff Joniak on our sister station, News Radio 780 WBBM and 105.9.
Your co-worker.
Yeah,
that's right.
There. He tells me how it is, man. He'll be on with us at 9:40 to talk about the Bears and to discuss the 34th anniversary of the Bears winning of Super Bowl 20.
Defense, big and bold.
Hey, Alonzo Spellman, it's Samurai. Come out.
style.
Come out.
Give me a chance. I'll rock you good. I don't know, dude. We don't owe royalties on something like that, do we?
I don't know. You might be in trouble. Not okay. me. That's
all right, you got it, Mitch.
That's
got
your that problem. Check. That's on you, man. That's on you. But number 57, Tom Thayer, will join us at 9:40. We'll definitely talk about Super Bowl 20, but we'll also get into Bears issues, and we'll ask him about the Super Bowl and just have fun with Tom Thayer at 9:40. At 10 o'clock, we will be joined by Scott Merkin. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. He has been out at Sox Fest the last couple of days, so we will get his impressions on what he saw and what he thinks about the 2020 White Sox. Pat Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times will be on with us at 11 o'clock. He covers the Bears on a daily basis for the Sun-Times, but he happens to be right now in Orlando, Florida, covering the Pro Bowl, which is today. Oh, yeah, the Pro Bowl is today. We always forget about the Pro Bowl, but it is happening today later on this afternoon. So before that game goes down, Finley will join us, and we'll certainly talk about the Pro Bowl, and we will squeeze in some Bears questions, no doubt about it, with Mr. Finley. And then the wild card on the show today, the one guy that we have not been able to get to cooperate with us yet, another guy that it was suggested to me that we have this particular historian join us, and that man's name is Les Grobstein. Grobber is, Sean had reached out to him, Sean Anderson, our producer today. He asked me the right question, and Sean asked me, he said, and he was serious, and it was a good question. He said, does Grobber text? Does he take text? Because I text him, and I haven't heard back from him. I said, Sean, that's a really good question.
Right.
No.
It's a fair question when it comes, because Grobber would be the type of guy who would just reject texting on principle, because that's what he does. I don't believe in texting. I think it's a scam. It's another way for the phone companies to make money. Like, he just on principle alone,
I can see that
the Grobber would be anti-text message. But I got a feeling we'll be able to have Grobber on. You're all about the singing today, man.
So far. It's early. It's early. As you reminded us yesterday, the Grammys are tonight. And my wife and I went out to a concert the other night, so I am in a bit of a musical mood, I suppose. We went and saw
good.
The show. So, yeah, who knows? There'll be a lot of singing happening. Probably not much dancing. I mean, I don't think the cameras in here are on right now, but I wouldn't anticipate that'll be the last time you'll hear me in song.
I love it, man. We got, yes, the Grammys are tonight. Alicia Keys is hosting, or is it the Lizzo show? There'll be a lot of Lizzo. She'll probably win all the awards. She'll perform tonight. Billie Eilish is up for like every single award. We'll break some of that down, and I know that you had the concert that you went to.
I did, yeah. I went to a group that I became familiar with because of they got these NPR Tiny Desk concerts that they do on YouTube, on NPR's YouTube channel, and a group called the Tedeschi Trucks Band, because my wife just loves playing, we both like playing music. For our son, we got a 2-year-old at home, and every once in a while, Bishop just like his ear perks up, and he heard the Tiny Desk from the Tedeschi Trucks Band, and as soon as he heard their music, it's this kind of bluesy, bluegrass kind of soulful rock kind of vibe to it, and he lights up every time we would turn on Tedeschi Trucks Band, and I mean, them amongst a number of other artists who he really digs when we play those for him. Like, he's really into the Roots. He loves Leon Bridges and Tedeschi Trucks Band. Their lead singer, this lady Susan Tedeschi, just has this great like kind of booming, like a booming slash raspy kind of thing, like a modern Janis Joplin maybe sort of deal. And she can really sing, man. So since they were in town and our son loves them, we went and checked them out. I only music of theirs that I had heard before going to the show the other night at the Chicago Theater was the three songs they do on the Tiny Desk concerts. And it was an awesome show. So, yeah, we can get into that a little bit at some point, too. I really enjoyed it.
That is terrific. So, yeah, so that Grammys talk. And also, we will discuss the White Sox, the Cubs, and even the Bulls.
Even the Bulls.
Did you watch Bulls basketball last night? Did you have time?
I did check out some Bulls.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bulls
yeah.
with a win last night over the Cavaliers, 118-106. Zach LaVine, a guy that
had about 116 of those 118 points.
That's
pretty much the role he's in these days.
I think, like, Nobody on that team wants Lauri Markkanen to be hurt, and Zach LaVine does not want his teammate to be hurt. Don't get me wrong,
but
he loves this. He loves this. He gets to be the player he wants to be.
Yeah.
Let's face it, Zach LaVine, deep down inside, wants to be the guy that scores all the points on that because he is just built to be a scorer.
Yeah, on this squad, why not?
He's a scorer. That's what he does. He loves this, man, especially since he's trying to make this run for the All-Star game and the reserves do come out Jan 30th. I think that'd be this Thursday.
It feels like there's a – I didn't think. A couple of weeks ago, I went and saw the Bulls when they played the Pacers. And at that point, I was thinking, man, it doesn't feel likely. And then he went off that night, and he's gone off several times since then for big scoring outputs. And now, like you referenced, we're marking it out of the lineup. He's going to have carte blanche, which I'm not sure it's a word that Jim Boylan would be familiar with, but whatever Jim Boylan term would be applicable to carte blanche, I think that's what he's likely giving to Mr. LaVine at this point. The minutes restrictions are off. It's just, Zach, go out there.
Do it.
Be you.
Yeah, be you, baby.
He's Jim Boylan as Matt Nagy. That's what he does, man. That's
dude,
what
he was. LaVine was. And there's no doubt it's in his head. And he's got to say the right things, does LaVine. You know, that, of course, he'd like to make it, but it's about team first. But LaVine last night, not just the 44 points, but the 10 rebounds and the 8 assists. That would be 2 assists shy of a triple-double. I can't believe he didn't get the triple-double last night.
There's not enough shot makers on the team. That's the problem, man. Somebody has to make a bucket for him to get the assist that's necessary. If he could just, like, throw himself a lob off the backboard, if those counted as assists, then I'm sure he'd do a few of those every game too, as one of the top dunkers in the industry. And I feel like that's probably part of why he's still holding off on the my impression is that he'll do the dunk contest if he doesn't make the All-Star game. If he actually makes the All-Star roster, then maybe he won't. Because
I think it's the opposite. I think that if he doesn't make the All-Star team, he's gonna be like, no, I'm not gonna come in here and do my little dance for everybody. You know, you get me into this thing, and then I'll show you everything. Then I'll put on a show. Why would he put on a free show? I mean, that's what it would be, right? You're like,
I suppose,
I'm not good enough to be an All-Star, but I'm good enough to be your dancing fool out here.
You can be onto something with that, because I think he recognizes the, I suppose, importance, for lack of a better term, of with the All-Star game being here in Chicago and him being the best player on the Chicago Bulls, and him participating in All-Star Weekend to some extent, not just to the fandom of Chicago, but we think about, Michael Jordan was already a rising star in 88, but the last time the All-Star game was here and Jordan just owned All-Star Weekend, then it put him on another plateau. And, I think Zach LaVine has that individual opportunity to do something along those lines, not to become Michael Jordan, of course, but to at least enhance his stardom beyond what just winning a couple of slam dunk titles in the past did, but to have the building rooting for him, to have the juice in the building for at least one of, if not multiple, of those nights during NBA All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, to maybe become like a made man. If he's like a 7 on that thing, maybe he goes up to about a 9, especially since, and I think it'll be fun if Derrick Rose is there, Jimmy Butler is there, but you definitely want, I know the Bulls organization would like true Bulls representation, and that would be in the form of Zach LaVine. So I hope he's there.
I wonder if D. Rose is there, if that just overshadows everything else. And not even that I would mind it, but I wonder within the heart of Bulls hearts if they're kind of like, you know what, man, if D. Rose is in the house, then it's a bigger story.
Yeah,
it's a huge story, and it's going to be D. Rose sort of overshadowed. Like, D. Rose then gets to own All-Star Weekend if he's there, pretend like for the Pistons, or if he's traded before then or whatever may happen. But if D. Rose is in the house, it's D. Rose's weekend.
Absolutely. He gets the biggest cheers. And if LaVine is there, he'll get big roars, but it won't be close to what Derrick Rose gets.
Right.
And Jimmy Butler maybe somewhere in the middle. I think that there's still appreciation for him. But
there is.
But Rose
maybe
is,
a few jeers, too. He became a little polarizing there. But, yeah, I think more cheering than not for Jimmy Butler.
Absolutely. One thing too about the Bulls are 18-30, and I want everybody to remember the day that Markkanen was injured, because
remember
the day Michael Jackson.
Remember the time.
Remember
yeah,
the time.
I was thinking more. I was thinking more along the lines of remember the 5th of November. But
I'm trying to keep up with you, man.
No, I hear you.
You're singing, you know.
Well, yeah, because you carried a note there briefly.
Yeah,
somewhat, almost.
You know, I mean, I like the show. We're here until noon today, and I'm going to have Anthony Heron just periodically singing to me,
mm-hmm.
and subsequently singing to Chicago.
I look deep into your baby blues when I do it, so maybe it'll get awkward at certain points.
I appreciate you.
Don't let it throw you.
But the Bulls, the record they are right now, 18-30, and whatever, they were a 17-win team when Markkanen went down. Remember this date, because what happens a lot of times, if the Bulls continued to be horrible this year, and it turns out to be a horrible season, I don't want to hear, well, the Bulls were without Lauri Markkanen for
right,
a while. Like remember
right.
this, that the Bulls yeah. were bad even with Markkanen, and that we will not use. I don't want to hear anybody mm-hmm. saying, and that means from the Bulls organization or anybody here or in the media saying, well, the Bulls were unfortunate this year because you know they had the Markkanen injury. No.
Mm-mm.
So mm-mm. just mark that down. Make a mental note of it, because I think we've all fallen for that trap before where we forget that our teams were bad even before the injuries occurred. So keep that in mind. I also felt bad for one guy on the court last night, and he plays with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he's Kevin Love. Kevin Love, who did his thing. He had a double-double. That's what Kevin Love does. Mm-hmm. 20 points and 11 rebounds. But he's the guy that got left behind. He right. got left. Kyrie, right. LeBron, yeah. I'm still here. Somebody coming.
Yeah,
it's like the plane took off, and LeBron was on it, and Kyrie just barely made it in. And then you picture Kevin Love running down the track trying to get out of the
plane.
He's
on the tarmac with his bags in his hand and like an overcoat on, flapping in the wind as he's trying to chase the plane down, and they kind of took off just before he got
right.
there.
He's like, ah, damn. And then he goes back. He's like, all right, I'll make the most of it. But of course, there's heavy trade rumors centering on Kevin Love. I heard Chuck Swirsky say that Phoenix is the most likely destination for him. So he may find his way out of the orphanage and into his own home again in the NBA.
Good for him if he does.
But that remains to be seen.
Quality player.
We have, coming up on the show, 9:40, Tom Thayer will join us. And what do you want to talk about next? Do you want to talk about the White Sox next, or do you want to talk about the Super Bowl next? Because I got some Super Bowl. Let's talk about the Super Bowl next.
Yeah, I like that.
Because we got Merkin at 10 o'clock to talk about the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
I have some thoughts on a team that, if this team wins, it may change the NFL. It's coming up next. It's Mark Grody, Anthony Heron on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
18 seconds, they will count it down here at Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs' kingdom, hoping, their dreams have come true. Hail to the king of the Chiefs' kingdom forever. Because today, the team that Lamar Hunt founded has just won Lamar Hunt's trophy in the stadium that was Lamar Hunt's dream. Kansas City is the AFC champion. They are headed to Miami for Super Bowl 54.
Mitch Holmes selling it on Chiefs Radio. Here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, Mark Grody and singing Anthony Heron with you until noon today. And we're here for you, too. 312-644-6767 is the number. Textable, always refreshing the text screen at 670-11. You can find us both on Twitter, Anthony Heron, at Big Ant. and me, Mark Grody, at Mark Grody Sports is the way to do that. So interact with us here until noon today for sure. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. 1 week from today is when Super Bowl 54 will go down. Feb 2 in Miami, Florida, San Francisco against Kansas City. The way I look at this game, one of the bigger picture types of things for this one, Big Ant, is I think that if Kansas City wins, it'll probably be more entertaining for the massive audience. Mm. If San Francisco wins, it'll be more interesting for all of the National Football League. And the way things change in the league, it's a passing league, it's a big offense league, it's score more than your points, or score the big points in this league, and I get it, and I don't know that that's going to change drastically. But if San Francisco is to win, you know, to some degree, the old-fashioned way, at least the way they've been doing it in the postseason, right, with a rugged offensive line and basically telling you that you can put anybody in the backfield, Raheem Mostert, and they're going to have huge success, that this could make some GMs, even owners to a lesser extent, say, hey, here, we want one of the coaches that could do it that way. We want one of those offensive lines. We want one of those running backs. I don't know that it's going to make like dramatic changes to the NFL, but I do think that it would make people stop and think a little bit and reevaluate if San Francisco is to win.
That's what had me, I won't go as far as to say rooting, but I would have enjoyed watching Tennessee and San Francisco in the Super Bowl because of the style of game it would have been, because it would have felt real retro. You know, it would have felt like a game that we would have seen 20 years ago or something like that, where it's going to be teams who are going to run the football, teams who are going to play this dogged, dominant version of defense, teams who were, you know, not too dissimilar from the 85 Bears on their anniversary day here, where I do think that for what the Titans were, it was a formula that is most likely to be able to defeat the Chiefs, and San Francisco operates with a very similar formula, just with, like you mentioned, a variety of backs who go back there and get it done, but an offensive line that plays at a really high level, a head coach who knows what suits his squad from a play-calling standpoint, and if they can, you know, utilize a similar formula with a better defense than the Titans, but a similar formula of saying that we're going to shorten the game, we are going to pick up first downs, and I feel very similar about this game as I did to that Titans game, where if they put touchdowns on the board as opposed to, you know, kicking field goals in the red zone, then that is, as long as they mount some drives, which they should be able to do against this Chiefs defense, mount some drives with the ground attack, if they can make that happen, then when they get into strike territory, they got to strike. And that's what it's going to come down to. And I think that for the Chiefs, I look forward to watching Pat Mahomes in a Super Bowl because I love seeing guys of kind of preeminent talent. I love seeing them perform at a high level on big stages. You know, I prefer that over the storyline of here's this ultra great player who doesn't play well at the biggest moment. Now, it's newsworthy when they don't, but just for me as a guy who just enjoys sports in general and knows, you know, obviously all the work that the guys put into it, I enjoy seeing great players play great when a lot of eyeballs are watching. So that's where, yeah, I do hope that Pat Mahomes goes out there and lights it up. And that doesn't necessarily mean that's the only way that that San Francisco can win is if he doesn't light it up. They got a few weapons over there, but it feels most likely that they really got to hold down the Chiefs offense far more than we've seen most opponents be able to do over a 60-minute football contest.
Yeah, and that's why I would think that they might be a little like Kyle Shanahan's thought process or those who coach San Francisco, that it might creep up into their mind that this is the game that maybe we don't want to go an hour and a half of real time with Tony Garoppolo not throwing the football, and that they might feel the need, and I don't want to use the word panic, but maybe the urgency to, look, we've seen what Kansas City has done, just completely deleting deficits in the last 2 weeks of the playoffs, and no lead is safe, that maybe you need to, that you do need to open things up a little bit if you're San Francisco. Do you think that thought creeps into their minds, or are they going to stick with their methodical style that they have had so far in the postseason?
I think more likely than not, they'll stay methodical with it because that's kind of what got them here. And I do think that to to look at how frequently, how often, how long they can keep Pat Mahomes on the sideline will very likely be a part of what they see as their best chance for success, to not give the Chiefs offense more and more drives, to allow them on the field less frequently to protect the football, to eat up some clock, and just to finish drives is what will give them the best chance. Because the more opportunities you give Kansas City, you give Pat Mahomes, you give Andy Reid, you give all those weapons, the more drives you give them to kind of dissect you, to figure you out, then that's where they can turn into the Golden State Warriors of recent vintage, where they get out there, they get into a rhythm, they force you to start playing the game at their tempo, and they just get rolling in it, and they light you up and allows their defense to take the field with a little more energy, a little more verve, a little more confidence, because they know, all right, offense is rolling now, offense is putting points on the board, we can take a few chances, we can try to get some takeaways, special teams out there stripping away at the ball, trying to see if they can, you know, create some extra possessions for the offense, and everything for Kansas City seems to snowball once they get into that mode, whereas if you just force them to play the game at your more methodical tempo, if you slow things down, if you say you're not going to be on the field for very long or very often, Pat Mahomes, then that sort of rhythm, that sort of kind of bravado that they come onto the field with when they get it rolling, then it's not as easy for them to attain that if they're just not out there gaining that rhythm.
That's the smooth and insightful voice of Anthony Herron. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, 312-644-6767 is a numbered update to our guest list. I'm refreshing it right now. I'm pressing the button, and I see Les Grobstein joining us at 1040 to talk about Super Bowl 20. This is the 34th anniversary of it. Tom Thayer going to be on to talk Bears and that anniversary as well at 940. We do have Scott Merkin to talk about the Chicago White Sox at 10 o'clock. Pat Finley at 11 from the Chicago Sun-Times. He is at the Pro Bowl.
A lot of guests.
In Orlando. So,
more
yeah.
guests than you and I normally do.
It is. Well, kinda, like I said,
in a jocular sort of manner. But yeah.
Those two were tacked on this morning. Uh-huh. We had two going in, but man,
like yeah.
we got room. We got room for you on plenty this particular show. From the 312, and you can text us at 670-11. So you're saying, and this is based on something that I said, so you're saying organizations might change their approach based on the result of one game. Yeah. I mean, yes. And obviously, the season two that built up to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is what I'm saying. That if an organization, if other teams can look at a squad and say, yeah, that team won it that way, then yes, that's the way the National Football League works.
Yep.
I mean, one team started to throw the ball around and fling it and realize that you don't have to run the ball as much, and all of a sudden running backs stopped being drafted in the first round and it's all a passing league because one game happened or one team occurred where that went down. And so, yes, I am saying that one game could affect. I'm not saying that all of a sudden every single team is going to be drafting a left tackle
right.
in the April draft. I'm just saying that, yes, teams will look at San Francisco and say, I want to do that too. And maybe it's that way. If I don't have a superstar quarterback like Pat Mahomes, maybe this is the way I'm going to build a team. And yeah, I think that other GMs are looking at that way.
I'm taking just a look to refresh my memory on, you know, the Super Bowl champions just over the past couple of decades. I'd say the Philadelphia Eagles of a couple of years ago were part of what induced so much of the National Football League to start using the RPO as prevalently as they do
yes.
now. The New England Patriots, more the early portion of this decade where you had such success, not just with Rob Gronkowski, but also with Aaron Hernandez, just using multiple tight end sets and using those guys as Swiss Army knives and taking advantage of that from a personnel standpoint. You have guys, you have your blocker, you have your receiver, you have your motion tight end. And for things that the Patriots did, you saw a lot of the NFL beginning to copy that. So the Baltimore Ravens prior to that becoming the team that had the two mammoth defensive tackles and keeping the linebacker Ray Lewis free to roam and play great dominant defense and winning the game that way. Those are stylistically teams that have been essentially copied by a lot of other programs, a lot of other organizations around the NFL because of the way, not just that they had a nice season or made the playoffs or won a division or even reached the Super Bowl, but in winning the Super Bowl, that does tend to reset the purview of teams around the league saying, well, if it worked for them, a couple of things are going to happen. One, a lot of their personnel, everybody's going to try to mine their talent, basically. Let's try to get guys who have a ring now, who were a part of what won a ring there, and see if they can bring some of that shine over here. And then also just stylistically, how did they get that done? Whether it was they won with offense or won with defense or won with a run game or special teams talent, whatever it was that we felt like was a little bit different, a little bit enhanced over what everyone else around the league was doing, then that's where you hear, you know, copycat league is something that's thrown out about a lot of leagues. You hear it most prevalently about the NFL because it is how things tend to play out. Who was that head coach? What type of what style or scheme was he using that worked well? Who was the personnel they had, the size, the speed of them, what was working from the way that they were attacking folks? You're going to see, based off the result of this game, other squads around the NFL try to have personnel and coaching staff that suit the winner of this.
You think about, you know, you're talking about Ray Lewis. The Bears did something similar in the early years of Urlacher and Dick Geron. They had the two big heavies in Ted Washington and Keith Traylor.
Yep.
So they were in on that. And then when Lovie Smith came along, he changed it all, and they went to a completely different style of linemen, and Urlacher was, in essence, doing total, I mean, you know, in all sorts of different positions, as opposed to early on when he had just carte blanche. We keep coming back to that, where he can just do anything because he had the big fat guys up front taking care of business for him. So, yeah, it is. In this league, it is still true. It has become cliche to say it's a copycat league, but it is, and if San Francisco wins at all, even if San Francisco doesn't win the Super Bowl, there are going to be other teams that will take a close look at what San Francisco did and how they did it. The dirty little secret, though, too, is we do have to take a break, is that San Francisco, and I'll go through this a little bit later on, their offense has been really good this year. I mean, throughout the season and in a lot of categories comparable to what Kansas City was doing. So we'll go through that a little bit later on. But when we return from the break, Tom Thayer will join us, the former Bear, the radio guy with the Bears Radio Network, to talk about the Bears. And today is the 34th anniversary.
I'm the rookie. Maybe large, but I'm no
Super Bowl 20. Sean Anderson, get us out of here. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The stage is colorfully set for the NFL's top two companies, the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots.
Jim McMahon brings the Bear offense on the field. Hilgenberg is the center. Thayer and Bortz at guard, and Van Horn and Covert the tackles. Moorhead, one of the tight ends in motion. Perry, what drives through, and following behind is McMahon for the touchdown.
And there you see McMahon headbutting with his offensive line.
Feel like a 12-year-old again. Dick Enberg with the call on Channel 5. That's what we called it back then, Channel 5 on NBC. Mark Grody and Anthony Heron here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You were probably about 12 when this song was hot too, I think. Can You Feel It by the Jacksons? Let me check the year.
Yeah, you
this.
Check the year.
I'm going to do that.
I'll do this. 34 years ago today, in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Superdome, the Chicago Bears beat the New England Patriots 46-10, Super Bowl 20, when it was simple, just a couple of X's right there, no L's or I's or V's or anything like that. One of the starting guards on that terrific offensive line, the right guard, was number 57, Tom Thayer, and Thayer joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. What's going on, Tom Thayer? How are you this morning?
I'm good. You know, I kind of didn't even realize that it was January 26th. And then when I woke up this morning, turned on the news, and the date flashes in front of you, and it's an immediate reminder, just like the biggest events in your life, that no matter what the time is or what the day is, if there is something significant on that date, that's the first thing you're reminded of when you wake up.
What does that mean to you? I don't think I've ever asked you this specifically, but the fact that you went to Joliet Catholic, you are from here, you played your college ball at Notre Dame, you grew up presumably a big Bears fan, and then to have done that or to have been part of the most important era of Chicago Bears football, what does that mean to you now, and what did it mean to you then?
Ah, man, it was life-changing, you know, because like you said, when I was born in 61, you didn't have other avenues of exposure to other teams around the NFL. So whether the Bears were good or bad, you were a Bears fan and you were committed to do it. And that's what you grew up with. But then, you know, as you're a little kid, you're kind of just watching professional sports from afar when you still want to be a fireman or a policeman. And, you know, you just wanted to grow up. And then, you know, my older brother started playing football, and then I admired his success and how great of a player he was. And I wanted to play football too, because you know, I saw some of the benefits you were getting from it, and he got an opportunity to go to college. And, you know, everything, one thing led to the next. And along the way, when I was a young kid, I did go up to Lake Forest a couple times and watch Bears training camp. And when you sat outside the fence as a little kid and you looked at the guys coming across the street going to practice in the old Hallis Hall facility, you know, you're kind of mesmerized because that was, you know, the NFL. That was the best of the best. And and then you think about it all going to the Super Bowl after going to the USFL. I mean, it was just a great opportunity to be there and have a lot of local ties to it for me.
It's not always easy to have kind of the perspective or to be able to step back while you're in it and while you're being a part of something special to recognize just how magnificent it is, what's being accomplished. During that run, how much did you guys recognize that what you were doing would kind of live on for generations of football fans to come?
You know what the scary thing about it is, Anthony, is I think we thought too much of the fact that we were the youngest team in the NFL and we are guaranteed that it was going to happen again, hopefully multiple times. And I do believe that's the thing that we are thinking about as much as you are thinking about what the legacy was going to be of just that one-time opportunity, because going into the game and leaving the game, we never, ever figured that was going to be our one and only opportunity to win the Super Bowl. So as gratifying as it is, you know, there's always a little bit of lingering disappointment in there that you didn't, you know, you didn't do it again for the city of Chicago and for the legacy of that era of the Bears. So as great, you know, as many great things as there are, there's always lingering things in your mind that are always left behind that you weren't the multiple-time winner.
Talking to Tom Thayer here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, and today is the 34th anniversary of the Super Bowl XX championship in New Orleans, and I don't want to get too much into the minutia of the game because there was a lot of flash in the game. You had, obviously, William Perry and Jim McMahon and the Reggie Phillips pick six, but how gratifying was a simple Matt Suey 11-yard touchdown run to get the game going? And the dirty little secret there is that the Bears actually trailed in this game early on, and 12-year-old Mark Grody was panicked at that point.
So was I. You know,
were you?
You know, I was. My failure of a completion of a block was instrumental in Walter fumbling that ball.
Really?
And so when you walk off the field, and the only thing is your mind is you go, "Oh my God, I'm from Chicago, and I could be a reason why the Bears don't win this Super Bowl." So now let's speed up and talk about the Matt Suey run, because you kind of got an indication of what the total desire of the New England defense was, is to take Walter Payton out of the game completely. Walter Payton was not going to have the big 100-yard, 200-yard rushing game. So when Matt did score an 11-yard run, you kind of got an indication that this was going to open up opportunities for other people on the field. And whether it was Matt Suey or Willie Gault or Emery or, you know, Kenny Marjoram, all the guys, you know, had their hand in it at the end of the day because of the intentions of New England taking Walter out of the game.
Mark and I were talking a little bit earlier about the copycat nature of what Super Bowl champions end up bringing about. And, you know, whether it's been the Ravens with the mammoth defensive tackles, or even more recent vintage here with the RPO system that led the Eagles to a Super Bowl just a couple of years back. When somebody wins at that level, folks around the league are going to say, how do we do that? With you guys, 85, 86, you know, no one else had Walter Payton as their running back, but was there some semblance of how the Bears were being copied coming off of that year?
You know, that was an era where a majority of the teams, it was run the ball first and throw the ball second, like you alluded to with the change in the RPO and everything. It's like trying to draft the next Michael Jordan. Just because you have a template of what the guy looks like, his body style and shape, you're not going to draft him and he's going to turn into Michael Jordan. Just like when you look at, running back, is everybody going to go after a Derrick Henry now? Back then, what made Walter so great was his desire, his dedication, his willingness to be there on every day, his accountability of himself, you know. And so you're not going to go out there and just because a guy looks like another athlete, you're going to go out and draft him, and that's what they're going to turn into.
Well, let's bring it up to present times then. In Super Bowl 54, a week from today, which you could hear on the Score, San Francisco against Kansas City. And I was throwing it out there earlier that I think it would be probably more entertaining for the mass audience if Kansas City wins, but more interesting if San Francisco wins, because then they would do it supposedly the old-fashioned way, you know, by with a dominating offensive line, a good defense, a good enough quarterback. Could San Francisco change the way teams do business if they are to win the Super Bowl?
You know, I think the best asset you can have from any team is being able to put pressure on a great quarterback with only four guys up front. And I think that's what San Francisco can do. I think when you put the dividing line in the Super Bowl where you don't give one offense or defensive line any advantage according to the crowd noise like you do back, you know, in San Francisco last week or even in Kansas City, how destructive that can be. So I do think that it's really going to, you know, it's going to come down to see how damaging the defensive line can be. If you go back and you look at when the new New York Giants beat the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl, is they did it kind of exclusively with only running four guys at Brady. And at that time, he's probably considered, you know, one of the top two minds in the game with Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers and whoever you want to team him up with. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of similarity between that Super Bowl and the dominance of New England throughout the regular season and ultimately what the Giants were able to do to them.
From a matchup standpoint, in San Francisco being able to run the ball with such a wide variety of backs and not having, you know, like you referenced Derrick Henry and what he was able to do for the Titans, San Francisco haven't had that one individual. It's been a variety of backs, but still the same sort of approach by Kyle Shanahan, regardless of who it is, allow his offensive line to do work. I've joked over the past week or so that I almost hoped it was going to be the Titans versus the 49ers and hope that the Bears, that the current Bears would look at that Matt Nagy would look at that and say, you know what, there's some things I can adjust based off of the success of those two squads in the Super Bowl. Is there something that the current Bears can take from either of the two teams matching up in the game next Sunday?
Oh, man, I agree with you 100%. You know, I was really pulling for Tennessee last week because I wanted to say, okay, like maybe the Trent Dilfer era. Can you take one of the less thought of quarterbacks with the best running back and win a Super Bowl? Or if you have the greatest of what's perceived to be the quarterback play at this time, and can they be the one that can win a Super Bowl for you over the top of a running game? So, you know, I was kind of pulling for the old school values of, you know, what Tennessee was trying to accomplish. But, you know, when I look at San Francisco and, you know, they got, you know, two first round tackles, really good. They're, you know, inside, you know, they got Duke, Montana State and Air Force. I'm just talking about the colleges they went through, but the most dominating guy on the line of scrimmage is George Kittle. And what he's been doing at the tight end position, both as a receiver, but mostly as a blocker, that's increased the exposure to their running game. If you're running a zone running game and you're looking inside first and you want to break it outside, George Kittle can sustain a block against a defensive end, secondary linebacker, or even downfield on a defensive back. So to me, he's one of the key ingredients. As much as there is a variety of running backs, consistency as a blocker at that tight end position is equally as important.
Tom, last thing for me, I've been listening to you and Jeff Joniak on Bears All Access, which airs on various days here on 670 The Score.
Tuesday night this week, Grody.
Tuesday night? who we got on, man?
We usually don't know until maybe 48 hours before.
Okay, so Tuesday night is when that will go down, 6 to 7 o'clock here on The Score. And I've been listening to you guys talking to some of the new assistants, Bill Lazor, Clancy Barone, and Juan Castillo.
Castillo interview was great. I heard that one.
Yeah, what have your early impressions been of the new guys on the staff?
Well, definitely I know the reputation, and I know a lot about Juan Castillo from following offensive line coaches through my time as a player and even beyond. He was a USFL player when I was a USFL player, so familiar with him. You know, to me, it's more the years of experience that each of these coaches have. And, you know, I like Kevin Gilbride Jr. He was a real congenial guy, and he's a good young developing coach. However, I think when you put the Bears in a position where they need – They need help at tight end. They need to be more productive in the offensive line. I just think the years of experience that you're bringing onto the coaching staff can be beneficial to the players individually. But I also think the experiences that they've all lived through in conversation can be beneficial to head coach Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, because these guys aren't seeing things for the first time. In some instances, they're seeing things multiple times from different organizations and how they all handle them successfully or with failure. So I do think that, you know, Matt Nagy can improve from the experiences these guys are going to bring to the table as much as the players themselves.
Tom, I've thought recently, I think it was maybe something Lawrence Holmes tweeted out that had me thinking about the first rap song I ever memorized cover to cover. And it was LL Cool J's I Need Love. The first song of any kind that I ever memorized word for word, I'm pretty sure, was the Super Bowl Shuffle. Did you ever know every word of the song, and do you still now?
You know, if you and I were sitting there together and we were doing like carpool karaoke or something, and we were both singing it together, I do think I could get through it. But you know, it's kind of funny, during the Bears 100-year anniversary this past weekend is when we sat down some of the 85 guys and they all burst out into their lines, from Willie Gall to Otis Wilson into William Perry, and how well each of them knew all of their chords so specifically. And it, you know, I didn't participate in the Super Bowl Shuffle, so it wasn't something that was on the tip of my tongue, but you become so familiar with it because in the years times in leading up to the Super Bowl, that's all you heard. So it was kind of cool.
Tom, you're the best, man. And next time
two hard-boiled eggs yet today?
Oh, you should see him. Every commercial break, Tom, he's cracking a hard-boiled egg like over the computer monitor here.
Hard-boiled eggs are great for you. You know, keep eating them, but learn how to cook them yourself. I talked to Hilgi this morning, and he says there's an appliance on Amazon you can buy that cooks like 12, 6, or 8 at once.
Well, tell Hilgi to send it to me then, man. Help a brother out here.
I'm guarantee you he's listening. So, Jay,
Brody,
a hard-boiled egg cooker.
Help me
step
out.
Up.
Yeah,
now,
it's so funny you say that. Like, within 2 inches of me, I have a bag here that has one more hard-boiled egg in it that I bought today.
You can't work with Mark Grody without the studio smelling like eggs. I've learned that much.
You know what? He looks great because of it, so keep it up.
No doubt.
Tom, thanks for coming out with us, man.
Adios.
That is the one and only Tom Thayer of the 85 Bears, of Joliet Catholic, of Notre Dame. 34 years ago today, the Bears beat the Patriots 46-10 in Super Bowl 20. Life-changing for fans and for players alike. And it's funny, like, people always talk about how successful the 85 Bears have been since then in terms of the public and things like that, like to where a lot of them work in the media, a lot of them have been able to make money because of it, which is unbelievably great. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, check it out. Like the Bears that were last in the Super Bowl, although losing the Super Bowl to the Colts, there's a lot of guys from even that Super Bowl team now that are doing extremely well in Chicago media and making money off of just being in a Super Bowl. So there's kind of a new era of ex-Chicago Bears that are in media now. So it's a good mix now, the 85 Bears and the 06 Bears.
Agreed. There's something I didn't realize as a kid growing up in Chicago and in the burbs, and just there's not really another team in the city that connects all demographics, where we're all ships rise in the way that the connectivity of Bears fandom does. The Bulls' success in dominating the 90s, or the Cubs winning the World Series, is outstanding, but it feels like every group, every sports fan in the city is into the Bears in a different way than they are any other club.
It's the truth. Yeah, one of the big stories this weekend has been the Chicago White Sox. Sox Fest wrapped up yesterday. Coming up next, we will talk about the Chicago White Sox with Scott Merkin of MLB.com. He covers the White Sox every day. It's Mark Grody and Anthony Heron on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.